Previously on Flying the Line. With the 1986 ALPA presidential election neck and neck, candidate Tom Ashwood challenges the union's use of its long-standing contracted law firm.
This podcast is brought to you by the Airline Pilots Association. ALPA supports its pilots through a variety of resources, including a wide variety of training courses for the Air Safety Organization. If you're interested in volunteering in the areas of safety, security, pilot assistance, or jump seat, ALPA can provide first-class training. Talk to your MEC leaders and see where help is needed.
Welcome to the Flying the Line podcast, a look into the past of the Airline Pilots Association, a bridge from the book Flying the Line, Volume 2, by George E. Hopkins. Chapter 17, National Politics and Mergers, the Election of 1986 and Beyond, Part 3. Henry Weiss was born on March 31, 1910, the second son of a successful, hard-driving Baltimore clothing manufacturer who cannot be credited for making him a labor lawyer. Quite the contrary. His father hated unions and warred with them continuously. In 1925, when Henry was only 15, he entered Cornell University. Graduating from college at 19, he went on to Columbia Law School, graduating with his degree in 1932, at the bottom of the Great Depression. The surroundings of his office were a perfect reflection of Henry Weiss, straightforward and no nonsense. Henry's digs were Spartan, no deep pile carpets, no fancy artwork, no hushed atmosphere, just plain working-class New York simple. However, it did command a sweeping view of the Hudson River and Manhattan's Lower West Side. Weiss would say little of the unpleasantness of the 1986 election. He was far more interested in the future of the airline piloting profession than in settling old scores. Weiss worried most about two things: the effects of the globalization of the airline industry, and deregulation. He doubted that the U.S. government would be of much help to airline pilots in seeking to protect their jobs from cheap foreign competition. Unless pilots had some kind of national agenda, for example, one that included globalization high on the list, they were going to find themselves hard-pressed as a profession. Unless they spoke with a single voice on major issues and acted as a unified group, they were going to wake up someday and find their jobs had disappeared. After nearly half a century of valuing Henry Weiss's advice on an enormous range of subjects, Tom Ashwood probably made a mistake in attacking him. Nor was Weiss's decision to keep Braniff's pilots from voting in 1982, Ashwood's core complaint against him, clearly improper. Hank Duffy's victory over J.J. O'Donnell was so narrow that every vote was crucial, but we must remember that the Braniff situation was unique in ALPA's history at that point. Braniff's pilots represented an airline which, at the time, had ceased flying and seemed dead. In 1986, Frontier was not yet technically in bankruptcy. Weiss's decision to allow the Frontier pilots to cast their 407 votes was admittedly arguable, but Duffy would eventually win by a margin of 570 votes. Similarly, Continental's ALPA loyalists were clearly in the minority on their airline and had already lost a decertification vote. In any case, even if Weiss had ruled that they were eligible to vote, the Continental pilots might have gone for Duffy anyway. They had voted for him over O'Donnell in 1982. So the situation was murky, the political equivalent of the fog of war. Still, Ashwood had definitely touched a nerve by bringing the role of Cohen, Weiss, and Simon into political play. Whether it was the cultural inclination to criticize lawyers or substantive legal issues of the past, the law firm had been around so long and had engaged in so many critical actions that it had built up a backlog of pilots who could find reason to be disappointed with it in some way or another. But in fact, the role of Henry Weiss in the election of 1986 was always peripheral. The merger issue was dominant insofar as policy considerations played a part. After that, the choice of leaders came down primarily to a struggle for position among men who shared a consensus, far more than they would admit in the heat of the campaign. The BOD delegates would ultimately have to make their choice based upon personality, style, and hunch, not policy. Randy Babbitt, ALPA's executive administrator since January 1985, came aboard after the Duffy-Ashwood split was already full-blown and had a ringside seat at the 1986 election. Babbitt, whose talents as a conciliator would later play a pivotal role in winning ALPA's presidency in 1990, brought considerable insight to the questions of personality and style in ALPA's politics. As the campaign of 1986 moved into high gear, Babbitt realized that the Northwest Republic merger might throw the election to Ashwood, but even here, the candidates' personalities and styles figured prominently. Babbitt saw Duffy as an effective campaigner in small groups, but less convincing with large groups. Ashwood was just the opposite. While Ashwood was convincing audiences, Babbitt noted that he was always more comfortable with Duffy making the tough decisions, particularly in 1986, with all the mergers and ALPA getting squeezed as an institution. As the election campaign heated up, Duffy got a break when Roger Hall, United's MEC chair, unexpectedly entered the race, thus diluting the anti-Duffy vote. Hall initially indicated in March that he had no interest in running for ALPA's presidency. Then, a combination of things intrinsic to United's politics changed his mind. Hall, who had been elected MEC chair by a single vote, led an unstable coalition whose heart really belonged to Rick Dubinsky, who many considered United's leader of the future. Still, Hall's many admirers at United thought he had done a superb job during the strike, and that this prestige would carry over into a large vote by uncommitted BOD members. In addition, more than a few United activists, for all their dislike of Hank Duffy, were lukewarm about Ashwood. As these pressures mounted, Hall belatedly entered the campaign. Many believed Duffy's incumbency and the good relationship he enjoyed with the Group 5, or smaller, airlines, when coupled with the undeniable tactical skills of the fabled Delta machine, doomed Ashwood's candidacy. By 1986, Group 5 had more than 5,000 votes. Taken together, ALPA's smaller carriers made up one big airline. These smaller airlines depended upon ALPA and its administrative and financial support far more than the larger airlines. Because of this working environment, the personal relationships they had developed with their contacts in ALPA had a definite political impact. Randy Babbitt, who had helped negotiate so many contracts for these smaller airlines, would eventually owe his election in 1990 to the simple fact that the pilots working for the Group 5 airlines liked him. The same was true of Duffy in 1986. When the balloting was all completed, Duffy's strongest support clearly came from Group 5. Among the large airlines, Duffy took only Delta, Northwest, Pan Am, Piedmont, and less than half of Eastern. Ashwood took TWA, United, the lion's share of typically splintered Eastern, nearly all of US Air, and Republic by unit rule. The smaller carriers, the Alaskas, Suburbans, and Simmonses, generally favored Duffy. In a curious reversal to the pattern that saw most pilots affected by mergers vote for Ashwood, the pilots of Frontier voted for Duffy out of anger at Roger Hall, despite his withdrawal, and United. Because Hall and Ashwood effectively made up a ticket, the beleaguered Frontier pilots, reacting to the failure of their proposed merger with United, punished Ashwood, thus earning Henry Weiss the Ashwood faction's ire, as we have seen. Politics often comes down to the old notion that my enemy's friend is my enemy. Dick Ferris, angry at the 1985 strike's outcome, had sought to sabotage it by offering a merger to Frontier, conditioned upon the pilots' willingness to accept a B scale, which of course they would, because the alternative was bankruptcy and unemployment. United's pilots had just conducted a strike over this issue, so they could not allow Ferris to subvert their victory through the back door via this merger. If Frontier pilots were to don United's uniforms, they would do so under the same contract that United's pilots had sacrificed for in 1985. So, the United-Frontier merger fell through, not that it was ever much more than a maneuver on Ferris's part. Evidence shows he never had any intention of merging with Frontier, that he merely wanted to pick off some of Frontier's assets while embarrassing United's ALPA loyalists. Duffy's total vote came to 14,714 as compared to Ashwood's 13,604. In a somewhat surprising development, indicative of the ambivalence of many BOD delegates about politics, Roger Hall, the other half of the Ashwood ticket, won handily over Northwest's Skip Eglett, 18,086 to 10,331. Eglett fell victim to an internal political dynamic worked out in the corridors and hospitality suites during the long hours the night before ALPA's elections. The big airlines, grasping at unity and a show of harmony, moved toward Hall as an outsider who would carry none of the acrimony that had characterized the Duffy-Ashwood years. In addition, thanks to Hall's leadership during the strike, he had taken on the aura of a folk hero, and many delegates saw a vote for him as a symbolic gesture of solidarity with the United pilots and their stand against Ferris. The remainder of the national officer races settled out for a variety of reasons, probably indicative of a desire to keep political power balanced. The delegates reversed course again after electing Ashwood's alleged ally Roger Hall by electing Eastern's Larry Schulte secretary to replace the incumbent, United's Chuck Pierce, a loyal Ashwood supporter, although by a much closer margin of 15,116 to 13,304. Finally, genial Jack McGee of Ozark TWA, by 1986, a virtually permanent fixture as ALPA's treasurer, turned back yet another in a long series of challenges, outpolling US Air's Bob Spates, 15,502 to 12,918. When the election was over, Duffy observed the rituals of politics, declaring that when the dust settled, he hoped everyone would be marching in the same direction. Tom Ashwood accepted defeat with grace and equanimity. He returned to flying the line as a TWA B-727 captain and eventually re-entered the maelstrom of TWA's internal politics. He locked horns with Carl Icahn, got drafted as an MEC chair, and then recalled, a common fate at that airline. Hank Duffy would ask Fred Arenas to take over temporarily as TWA's MEC chair during one of that airline's constant emergencies. Arenas lasted one day. Now was the time to heal and come together for Duffy's second term. Meanwhile, Frank Lorenzo, focused on Eastern, was about to launch his attack. Next time on Flying the Line, Hank Duffy confronts his biggest challenge, Frank Lorenzo. Thank you for listening. This has been Chapter 17, Part 3 of Flying the Line 2 by George E. Hopkins, Copyright 2000. We hope you have enjoyed this podcast. To listen and subscribe to more in this series, please check us out online at alpa.org or find us on all major podcast platforms. Until next time, this is the Flying the Line podcast, a look into the past of the Airline Pilots Association International. Production copyright ALPA 2024, all rights reserved.